Everybody, and welcome to the Trauma and Mind Body Super Conference. We're back here with a fantastic guest. It's Dr. Jess Armin. He is a chiropractic doctor. He's also a registered nurse, but he also has many, many years of experience, profound experience with many different patients in the chronic complex illness area. And I know he has a lot to offer for us today. We're going to talk about neurotransmitters, but first, welcome Dr. Jess.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with your listeners.
Now, I was very interested when I was reading more about your background, a little bit about some of the forensic work that you've been involved with. And we're going to talk about neurotransmitters. And I don't know if you can make any link to that, but you've done, and also, yeah, you've been involved a lot with looking into the genetic profiling and so on as well. Very interesting. I'll just hand over to you, like, how you got into this and how you got interested in these topics.
Well, I've always been interested in natural medicine, and early on in my chiropractic career, I'm one of the few forensic chiropractors that there are, which means that I do a lot of different types of investigation. People think forensics, they think, you know, slicing open bodies, but really, forensics is how your profession relates to the legal profession. And I was one of two chiropractors in the United States that got a diplomate in forensic medicine, because I qualified for it, okay? And I also have a diploma in forensic examination, and I was a fellow of the American College of Forensic Examiners. And most of that work was investigative type work, okay? Fraud investigation, stuff like that. But the mindset was that of typically Sherlock Holmes, okay? Where you were looking at something from that particular mindset, you know, using the thought patterns like, you know, when you rule out the impossible, however, you know, whatever's left, however improbable, must be the truth. So when I started getting interested acutely in chronic illness, it was because my son suddenly developed schizophrenia. And as a good dad, I brought him to the psychiatrist, who plied him with a ton of medicines. And this glib, intelligent boy, who at the age of 10 was able to read Dante's Inferno and explain it to me, and who I had to keep up with when he was like 11 and 12 just to keep up with his brain, turned into a non-entity.
Wow.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I was, and anybody who has a child who's compromised in any way knows the severe pain that one goes through. But the powers that be, God, spirit, however you like to put it, I simply looked up and I said, this disease is is messing with the wrong daddy, and started diving into it. And all of a sudden, in front of me, all this training was thrown at me in neurotransmitter balancing, in the developing field of neuroendoimmunology, and the developing field in genetics. Okay, so I kind of got into that at the very, very beginning. And I was one of the people who actually correlated things, where some people were looking at MTHFR as being the end-all, know-all, and the alpha and the omega, and some people call it a deity and some people call it a devil. I was the guy saying, that's one that's one enzyme in a pathway, guys. How about we look at the whole pathway, you know, and what's needed to get the pathways working, and what can affect the pathways, you know? And that's where neuroendoimmunology came in. That started way back when with Hans Selye in 1936, with the general adaptation syndrome, and then with Adler in the 1970s with psychoneuroimmunology, and then Dr. Kellerman, you know, put it together as neuroendoimmunology, where the neurological system, the endocrine system, all the hormones, and the immune system are constantly talking to one another. And if you understood that, you could diagnose and treat most conditions. When you folded in the genetics and you folded in mitochondrial function, where everything happens, and that was more recent with Dr. Navio, and then had the mindset of, if you fix the cell membrane, you fix everything, because that's where all the miscommunication's happening. You put those concepts together, which we termed as bio-individualized medicine, Sean Bean and myself. The term never took, per se, but the concept is what I teach and what I practice. And in that manner, utilizing the forensic mindset, I was able to, you know, diagnose and treat almost all conditions, because I look at it truly at the molecular level on out. So that's kind of where it started, and that's how it progressed.
That's absolutely amazing. And I love that because you're the true medical detective. And that in some of these, yeah, medical detective, it's brilliant. And
sorry, I didn't bring my Sherlock Holmes hat with me.
But this, yes, but this is it, it. Some of these complex conditions, they do require people to dot connect and do those kinds of investigations. Yes. And you know, this is obviously a summit about trauma, but we're looking at top down and bottom up approaches. So it's a yeah, it's a big picture because, you know, childhood trauma can change the biochemistry, which in turn would then lead to neurotransmitter imbalances. So there's a kind of this reductionistic and simplistic approach that maybe we could start to, and you can sort of expand it out about people going, I have got this mood imbalance. I just need to take some supplements to balance my neurotransmitters. So this is the some of
it
the
really if. You know, your point is well taken, but I'll let you ask the questions and then we'll build it up from the base out. Because, you know, you obviously have a sophisticated audience, okay? And remember that no one's going to be impressed that we as healthcare practitioners can pronounce polysyllabic terms, okay, and know the pathways. It's your ability to explain it. Albert Einstein said, if you can't explain it to a six-year-old, you don't know it well enough, okay? Yes. So it's important that you understand the overview and understand that there are root causes, downstream effects, and how they can bounce off one another. This way, you don't get into the situation of, I'm going to take this, whatever it is, and that's going to fix the problem, because that's never the way it works unless it's a very acute problem. There is a difference between consideration of how one treats an acute problem versus how one treats a chronic problem. The acute mindset is to say, I will take care of the root cause, and the body will take care of itself. Which is to say, if you get strep throat, you've got nothing else going on, and your doctor very, very reasonably gives you antibiotics, you take the antibiotics, you feel rubbish for several days. Is rubbish the right word?
Yes.
Okay. I have to bring out my British and American dictionary and go, ah. It's like, wait, I'm using the wrong word here. Okay. And usually for a few days, you feel pretty bad, and then you turn the corner. Okay. That's your body resetting itself. That's for acute conditions, and all of medicine treats in that mindset. When it becomes chronic, that doesn't work because the ability of the cell to heal itself has been impeded to the point that it simply doesn't. And using the principles of acute care medicine does not heal the person with a chronic illness. This is why people with chronic Lyme disease are being told that Lyme disease can never be cured. Because the mindset is, let's kill the bugs. You can kill the bugs as much as you want, but if the cells aren't working, they will continue to have symptoms or they will recur with very little impetus. So this is steeped in very deep science right now. I mean, Dr. Robert Navio, who is the MD, PhD at the Metabolic and Mitochondrial Disease Center at the University of Southern California Medical School, okay, he wrote the cell danger response paper, which explains how a cell is injured and how a cell resets itself. Then he wrote another paper showing that if you use the acute care mindset in a chronic condition, you actually hurt somebody because you've got to fix the stuck cell danger response. Okay. Anyway, go ahead and ask your questions.
Yes.
Because I'll go off for hours and I can be a cure for insomnia with the amount I can talk. Okay. People will be like, he's really good. I fixed my insomnia. It's all right.
Dr. Robert Navio is one of these geniuses of our time. We'll have to have a separate piece just about him. But he doesn't do public speaking, so not this type of public speaking, unfortunately. Yeah. He won't do interviews. But so let's just talk about, in your experience, in my experience with neurotransmitters, it's something which we want to address later. I could be wrong, and I'd be very interested in your experience. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people are kind of, maybe we can talk about some of the main ones. What are the symptoms we'd look for example, if somebody potentially is low in them? But where would you start as a clinician? Because we can maybe touch on some of the sort of big things we'd need to consider about why a neurotransmitter has gone out of balance. But if I present to you, do you assess like symptoms of neurotransmitter imbalances when you take someone
Absolutely.
In? So you
there's
do.
There's a principle that was put out by, the saying is, if you listen to the patient, he's telling you what's wrong. Okay, so William Osler, who's one of the founding fathers of Johns Hopkins Medical Center, said that in 1895. We have since forgotten that. If you want to cure anything, my best joke is that in real estate, it's location, location, location. Okay, in medicine, it's history, history, history. You take a good history, and you know what clues to look for, which you should if you're a clinician. That's your job, okay? Then you're going to find out what's wrong. You know, I have a lot of people who can't afford testing. That's how I started. I learned to do this stuff empirically. So you start with a good history. So when it comes to neurotransmitters, we tend to think mood disorders. So let's talk real fast. What is a neurotransmitter? It is a chemical compound that takes a message from one neuron to another. Neurons are not connected. They have a space called a synapse. So when there's a message coming down, okay, the guy in the hard hat at the end says, I need some serotonin, okay, or I need some dopamine, I need some serotonin. And the storage areas come down, release what the guy wants, because if he doesn't release it, it could be bad, you know? But things can happen, you know, things. So, yes, I'm from Brooklyn, okay? And I know you guys love the Brooklyn accent. And I'm like, I spent 30 years getting rid of it. And then I'd go to the UK, which I do 2-3 times a year. And they're like,
go on, do it.
Please do it. I'm like, okay, you really want me to talk like I'm from Brooklyn? Because that's where I'm from. It's okay. What are you hey, forget about it, yo. And I'm Sicilian. So, you know, we don't call the cops. We call the family.
Yes.
Anyway, all my friends are like, Jess, you're not professional enough. You keep joking. I say, when you get my results, you can talk to me. Now get out of my face, you know? So a neurotransmitter comes from those storage vesicles, goes into the synapse, goes to the receptor, and lets the whatever the message is propagate. Then it pops off the receptor, and that neurotransmitter, which can be serotonin, dopamine, epinephrine, norepinephrine, phenylethylamine, and 300 more, including histamine, including nicotine, stuff like that. But let's talk about the main ones. It pops off and does one of a few things. It either hangs around with its buddies for a while, or it gets broken down, usually by COMT, okay, catechol-methyltransferase. When I say something fast, ignore it, okay? Because, like I said,
doesn't matter.
It's not important. It doesn't matter. It gets broken down, or we have a reuptake mechanism that brings it back into the axon so it can be reused. When stressors hit, there is a greater need for neurotransmitters. Okay, so those storage areas start emptying out, and we have enough neurotransmitters, and we have enough to work with. After a little while, if the stressors are constant, and what I mean by stressors, I mean those can be microbial, those can be viral, those can be parasitic, those can be fungal, those can be a psychological, emotional, spiritual stressors, that can be toxins, they can be, you know, a whole mess of things. They're all called stressors. And after a little while, the storage areas, the vesicles, the storage areas begin, by the way, you're going to hear me hit this once in a while because I'm Italian and I have to talk with my hands. If you want to shut me up, just tie up my hands, right?
Yep.
It's just the way it is. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
So as they lose the levels in the warehouses, okay, you get this optimal looking activity and you don't have symptoms, okay? And when those vesicles are completely depleted, then there's too little neurotransmitters in the synapse. You get miscommunication, and that's when you get symptoms. So it's going to be pretty far along. The medicines like the reuptake inhibitors, the SSRIs, Prozac, and things like that, what they do is prevent some reuptake of serotonin in this case, giving you optimal-looking activity for a while, but doesn't do anything about the production of serotonin. So those are doomed to fail, because when it's finally gone, there's nothing to reuptake. And as my mother would say in Brooklyn, if you ain't got it, you ain't got it. Okay? Seriously. If you remember this, if you listen to the stories, you'll understand this. So various neurotransmitters, high and low, can give you different symptoms. But I have to point out before I start saying this that what we're mostly concerned about is depression, anxiety, OCD, ADD, ODD, oppositional defiance disorder. Of course, the more serious things like schizophrenia and stuff like that. Autism spectrum disorders. These are all neurotransmitter imbalances for loads of different reasons because the way that we express our moods are through neurotransmitter imbalances or balances. And you have to realize, and listen to this one closely, that we'll use depression. Depression can be caused by any kind of imbalances. At first, they say an antidepressant, and they give you SSRIs. It's not always serotonin. So anybody who's been down this road realizes that most doctors will listen and say, oh, you're depressed here. Here's an antidepressant, which is usually a serotonin reuptake inhibitor. Doesn't work. So they double the dosage. That doesn't work. So I switch to another medicine, which is still an SSRI, maybe more specific. Doesn't work. Doesn't work again. So now we're 6 months down the road. Okay, you're trying different medicines. And all of a sudden they say, let's try something like Wellbutrin, which is SNRI and SDRI, which raises dopamine and norepinephrine. And eventually you're going to get the combination that helps that person. If you tested the neurotransmitters, you'd see what the balance is, you know where to start, if you're going to use the medicine. The fact is that the expression, depression, anxiety, ADD, comes from different and can come from many different neurotransmitter imbalances. Hence the reason why certain ADD medicines, which stimulate the adrenal glands, amphetamines, work with some kids and not with others. Okay? It depends on the imbalance. ADD, which is attention deficit disorder, you know, actually in an adult even, you know, not the ability to focus, comes from two basic reasons. One, a lack of phenylephrine and norepinephrine, which is the easiest thing to fix, or their mind is moving so fast that they have the attention span of a gnat. Two way different pathologies, same expression.
Very interesting, yeah.
History will tell you the difference. And of course, if you know how to read the testing, you know, doing a test is easy. Interpreting a test, it's hard. Okay, because you got to take a lot of things into consideration. So when somebody says, can you read my test? I said, no, you can read your test. Okay, you can read the numbers. You got to put the patterns together and say, ah, this is what's going on. And I'm not saying that people can't do it. I'm just saying that they have to get away from the pill for the ill, or this will take care of that, because anything can do it. Too little magnesium, too little calcium. Mood disorders are complex things in and of themselves. Need a lot of considerations. So neurotransmitters are one really good consideration, okay? What do you look for? Well, in history, you just take literally a history, see where the depression started or where the anxiety started. Was it as a result of a bug bite? Okay, you know, just listen for the correlations. Did you take a fluoroquinolone antibiotic like Cipro or Avalox, ciprofloxacin, or anything that ends in floxacin? You know, that's one of the things, that one of the rare complications of that, but boy, is it, when it crashes you pretty big time. Listen for the progression, okay? And because what happens is once you have something that imbalances your body, let's say it develops leaky gut syndrome, which is going to start increasing your inflammation, which is going to affect your neurotransmitter system, okay? You can start listening to the temporal relationships and find out, ah, this is what started it. Either I'm going to test for it or I'm going to treat it empirically. And what could possibly have happened? What are the probabilities in the neurotransmitter realm, okay, that will give you these expressions? So in the prefrontal cortex, which is your executive area where you have, you know, you think all the logical things you do, you have somebody who has impulsivity, lack of forethought, stuff like that, and everything you call a teenager. Okay, is, yeah, the reason teenagers are, shall we say teenagers, let's face it, we've all had them. Oh my God, I'm like, why did you do that? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? I don't know. I'm like, come, give me a break. All right? It's because their prefrontal cortices don't develop completely until they're 25, okay? But epinephrine, norepinephrine, and dopamine kind of run that area. And the anterior cingulate, which is your flexibility, and this is where ODD and OCD come in, you know, that's run by serotonin. The basal ganglia is the home of anxiety, okay? And we have two sides, and they can express differently, where you have internal anxiety, okay? That's more being very depressed, okay, very self-injuring, okay, where external anxiety would be homicidal thinking, that person that yells a lot, that's really external anxiety, okay? Anger, yes, but external anxiety. either way, serotonin is a guy who's the primary. So you start listening to these symptoms, and you're like, I can figure out right from here what things are imbalanced. Okay. Depression lives in the thalamic limbic system. Okay. And that system kind of sits over the cribriform plate. And that's where you have your emotions, how you tag your emotions. So we've all been in a situation where, you know, a certain thing happens and we put a particular significance on it. And if there was a smell involved, like a cologne or a perfume or something, every time, or even in, if you remember being in the forest or anything, I go, camp when I was a kid smelled like this. Okay. Why does that happen? Well, those molecules that you were smelling at the time went up through the cribriform plate inside your over here and get distributed in the limbic system, and they get associated with that emotion. And guess what? Every time you smell it, you get the emotion again. But you need serotonin to run that area. Okay, so a lot of the imbalances, and then we start getting into the temporal lobe, which gets a little crazier. All right, and those imbalances, if you just listen to the symptoms, you can figure out some of the imbalances. But I guess what I want everybody to understand is that whatever symptom you're expressing can be several different imbalances, okay? And one has to not only think about the imbalances, but think about what caused them, okay? And what can cause them? Well, infection, big time, because infection creates things called pro-inflammatory cytokines. And we're all talking about the COVID-19 now, and what people die of is a cytokine storm. If anybody's really scientifically interested, we're talking IL-6 and IL-17. Don't worry about it, all right? And by having a system where that can be allowed to go crazy, then you have just this big buildup of inflammation, and it affects all the body systems. This can happen from infections. It can happen from toxins. It can happen from abuse. It can happen from PTSD. And abuse doesn't, remember, PTSD doesn't have to be a single event, like a rape, which destroys women right at the core. Remember, rape is an act of violence, not act of sex, okay? And it's a complete loss of control.
Yep.
Why it happens in soldiers. A picture being in a foxhole and people firing weapons over you, and they're going to crawl into your foxhole and kill you, and you're like this, and you've got total loss of control. A woman who has been sexually assaulted has the same, you know, destruction of the psyche at the basic level. But continued abuse. A child who's been raised in a non-nurturing environment. Remember that children may not be able to express what they see, but they feel it.
Yep.
Okay, babies feel what you're doing. I was an A&E nurse for a long time. And one of the things I learned and that I used in my forensic work is that if I saw a family come in and I suspected abuse, I watched who the child went to, because that was the abuser. Remember, little Johnny, if you're hitting him, thinks that he's a bad boy. So you must be hitting him for that reason. So he's always trying to satisfy the abuser. So if you want to know who the abuser is, just watch who they're running to. Mm-hmm. They don't run to the nurturer, they run to the abuser. You know, and it's a horrible thing to watch. It mm-hmm. really is.
Mm-hmm. So you would
that,
say,
that, is what, yeah. Yeah, that will happen, excuse me.
Yeah, so just to confirm there, that's a big topic on the stomach as well. Look, it's trauma isn't just a single discrete event. It's also, it can be emotional neglect. And what we're saying is that that can change the biochemistry and knock the neurotransmitters out downstream. So it starts with the emotional level, can hit the biochemistry. And then what's interesting is that then the biochemistry changes to change the emotional state even more. So it's, and then one feeds back
exactly.
on the other. So we have this mind body, and I just wanted to really make that point to people. So
good. So I want you to. That's great.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
And so that people will address neurotransmitters as well. Don't just
exactly.
consider looking. It's a missed, to me, it's an area that can really help if you really want to get your neurotransmitters sorted out. Do the psychology side for trauma, but look into this as well.
We call it a safety pin cycle. We used to do in chiropractic where, spine would cause, and this is big, the ulcers would cause pain in the middle spine because it created the subluxation. So if you treated the ulcer but didn't treat the middle spine would create the problem again, okay? And it worked back and forth all the time. Same thing here. You're exactly correct. How many people have had these issues or having a physiologic symptoms, which is depression, anxiety, they're all physiologic symptoms. They go for therapy, and I always hear, well, it helped, but it didn't last, okay, or it didn't help at all. Then we have to figure out if it's the right therapy and so forth. But you have to do with the mindset of, well, we have to do combined things. If you don't, it doesn't matter, how much therapy you have. If you don't have any serotonin in your system, guess what? You're not going to get it by eating turkey, okay? Yeah, if you eat two turkeys a day for about a year and a half, you might get enough serotonin, but it has to be elevated in real time, okay? And the other side of the coin is when I'm treating somebody who I know through history has had a lot of trauma, but they've never really dealt with it, and this takes a little bit of legerdemain as a clinician. You'll deal with the physiology, but there'll be a point where you have to look at them and say, well, the reason this keeps happening is because it's running down here. It's like Chernobyl. There's an atomic pile still going, and those, where they put all kinds of concrete, and it's going to crack, and the radiation is going to come out in different ways. So you're going to have different kinds of symptoms. You're not going to relate it to the traumas that you've had, okay? And I'm not a psych. I mean, I have a degree in psychology, but I'm not a psychologist, okay? I understand the relationships, and I explain that to my patients. Look, I can turn you on to people who will treat you very, very well, okay? And yes, they won't tell me what's going on, but trust me, if they treat you badly, I will know about it, okay? And they know I will show up at their door. Nobody treats my patients badly. It would be a bad thing. Things can happen, tings, And they know too, like he'll show up at the door. But he's in America. He'll fly. Okay? They're not allowed to fly. Don't worry about it. He's got wings. If he shows up at your door, he's not going to be happy. Or one of his friends without necks is going to show up at the door and say, "Hey, the doc told me I got to do something with you because you treated Mrs. Jones badly. Man, you don't want this to happen because it could be bad." And seriously, when I take on a case, I'm the old type practitioner that I take complete responsibility and patient advocacy. I like to call myself a specialist in chronic illnesses, which is what I do, but I'm really like a generalist in that I make sure that everything is coordinated because most people need that when, especially when they're very ill. They go to their GP, who's very limited, especially in England and most places, on what they're absolutely able to do. Okay. And specialists are only interested in their particular specialty, which is the only reason you should go see them anyway. You go see a gynecologist, you don't expect them to be an orthopedist. Okay, you go to see an orthopedist, you don't expect them to be an internist. And you go to see a specialist because you need somebody in their specialty, not to be a generalist. Unfortunately, nobody's talking to each other. And the generalist is not coordinating properly.
And
And they're being
that's, yeah,
prevented from doing so.
that's very, and that's very confusing for clients as well. So no, it's a
Absolutely.
brilliant service that you're giving there. So just tell me when, so you're looking at symptoms, and let's talk about testing for a second.
Sure.
Like, how do you actually assess somebody's neurotransmitters? The history, symptom analysis, and what type of testing do you actually do? Is there anything that's valid out there?
Yes. I want you to understand something about testing and when I'm lecturing, and I half of my week is teaching doctors, which, by the way, is so difficult. Okay, and the other half of my week is treating patients. When you are assessing neurotransmitters, okay, you have to realize that you're not assessing the central nervous system transmitters completely. It's a combined peripheral and central nervous system. So you don't look at it as an exact number. You look at the pattern. Because what you're looking at is biomarkers. Now, there's a ton of research out there for, excuse me. This always happens, especially when I'm nose itch, okay? What you're looking for is not the exact numbers, but the pattern. If the dopamine's high and the serotonin's low, well, if you want to control that and you know that that serotonin counterbalances dopamine, you just bring this up and that'll come down, okay? But it's not an exact number, and you have to look at it as generality. So you look at the testing and you say, how does this correlate with the symptoms? If it, and because I've had some things that are like way out of whack, and I'm like, it doesn't correlate with the symptoms. It's either a lab error or something else going on. But whether you use urinary neurotransmitter testing, organic acid test, and I'll explain the difference between all of them, okay, serum transmitter neurotransmitter tests, or platelet, okay, you're getting biomarkers. The only way to get true neurotransmitters would be to extract cerebral spinal fluid.
Right.
And you don't want that, okay?
Yes.
Unless you've got meningitis, you don't want anybody putting a needle in your spine. And I'm certainly not going to do it.
Okay, no, no. Yes.
A bad thing. The serum tests that you get from your doctor are good, except the reference ranges are a little strange. I'll give you one that makes me always laugh. In one of our labs here, 0 to 140 is considered the reference range for dopamine, which begs the question, is zero dopamine okay? No. Okay? It doesn't tell you much. Two basic tests that are very, very good. Either urinary neurotransmitter testing from someplace like Labrix or Doctors Data Institute, and there's a few other places, which actually test the actual neurotransmitters in the urine. And you see them on a scale. Okay? And there's a place in Australia, Neutropath, I think, labs do the same thing. Or you can do organic acid testing. Organic acids, usually from either Genova or Great Plains Laboratories, okay, what they test are the organic acids, which are the result of cellular metabolism. So they're not actually testing dopamine. They're testing homovalenic acid, which is HVA. If you look at the pathway, dopamine will go down to HVA. It passes by COMT, MAO, and a few other guys. And it needs B1, B2, B3, SAMe, and magnesium to run it. So if you have a low HVA, you're really not sure whether it's a low dopamine or a lack of those cofactors in the pathway. If you have a high HVA, well, then you can presume it's a high dopamine, okay? Because it's only one reason for it to be high. Same thing with VMA, which kind of represents epinephrine, norepinephrine. They test for 5-HIAA, 5-hydroxylandoacetic acid, okay, which is directly a result, if you look at the pathway, if this is serotonin, it goes directly to 5-HIAA. Serotonin will also become melatonin if there's enough B5 and B6, okay? But you can make a pretty good presumption if the 5-HIAA is low, then your serotonin is low. Then you have to ask the question, why? All right. And if with an organic acid test, you're going to get a few other little markers, one of them being quinolinic acid. If you have a lot of infection or inflammation, your tryptophan, which becomes 5-hydroxytryptophan and becomes serotonin and then breaks down, will be stolen out of the pathway by a different enzyme called IDO. And when it steals your tryptophan, it creates this quinolinic acid, which is a heck of an excitotoxin. So here's somebody who's got a lot of infection, who's got loads of dopamine and epinephrine because they're being stimulated like heck, and their serotonin is supposed to counterbalance it and calm them down, but the precursor, the thing that creates serotonin, is being stolen out of the pathway to create another excitotoxin. So, oh my God, you know, the back of their head's blowing off. But if you see a high quinolinic acid and a low serotonin, and the other guy's way up there, you say to yourself, okay, this person's got an infection, and that's the reason for this all going on. So let me help counterbalance. Let me give them some 5-hydroxytryptophan, bring the serotonin up. Okay, let me help the neurotransmitters in the short term and fix the problem, which is the way you have to look at it. That's interpretation. When you look at the pattern and you have a history, you can sit there and go, okay, this is what's going on. All right. How do you fix neurotransmitters? Well, there's some basic stuff and there's more advanced stuff. For instance, if you're sure you have a low, if any neurotransmitter needs iron, and most of the B vitamins, okay? BH4, which is tetrahydrobiopterin, you can't get as a supplement, okay? But if you're getting your vitamins and minerals that are going to get into the cells, big if, okay, and you're getting enough iron and so forth, your neurotransmitter system has all the factors that it needs to work. Now, the next thing you have to make sure is that it has the substrate, okay? Meaning, if you want to raise phenylethylamine or norepinephrine because somebody's got ADD, you can start out with DL-phenylalanine, which will preferentially create phenylethylamine, okay? And then it creates tyrosine, which then creates L-DOPA, which then creates dopamine, and then norepinephrine, epinephrine, and all the other guys. Sometimes that works really well, okay, if you want to raise forebrain arousal so they can pay more attention. Trick, do it slow. Really, do it slow, okay?
Right, right.
If you're working with adults, you do it slow. Kids, you have to use quarter doses to begin with. Because if you're wrong, what's going to happen is the symptoms are going to get worse.
Right.
And if you started off slow, you can back off easily and nobody's hurt. Okay?
Yep.
For serotonin, if you give them tryptophan, it might be stolen out of the pathway. So you use 5-hydroxytryptophan. You start slow. And my usual recommendation is 50 milligrams a day. Even though I may end up at 400, I'll do 50 milligrams a day. And they come like that. Question I get all the time, so I'm going to address it right here.
Yep.
Can taking 5-hydroxytryptophan give you serotonin syndrome, which is a very life-threatening, dangerous syndrome? No. The only way you can get serotonin syndrome is overdosing on SSRIs. There's two studies out there that address this. One, some people would read the study, say that 5-hydroxytryptophan doesn't do that. The second study they did on one dog. If I catch these people, I'm going to get them. I don't know what they did to that poor dog, but one dog, I like dogs. Dogs are my best friends.
Yes.
You know, boys and dogs, even though it's boys and dogs, girls and horses, boys and dogs. Boys and dogs get along because they think alike, okay? You see a boy and a dog, they look at a puddle. They look at the puddle, look at each other, look at the puddle, boom, right through the puddle, all right? And then they go home, mom starts yelling at them, right? And they look at each other and say, he made me do it, okay? Now, I've raised three boys. And I can tell you with authority that if you scoop out dog brain and scoop out boy brain, and exchange them, you'll see no difference in behavior. Okay? They look alike, they smell alike, they act alike. And that's pretty cool because, like, well, how you doing? Okay. You know? They're the best. They come over to my house, my kids, when I was back in Philadelphia, like, what do you got to eat? I said, you're 40 years old. What do you got to eat? And dog's like, what do you got to eat? You know, they're all like the same, become 13 again. You know, I used to barbecue. They used to swipe stuff all the barbecue. I'm like, what's going on, man? There's nothing on here. Like, what else you got? You know? But let's face it, boys and dogs, they're just what it is. All right? So anyway, it's true. The reason it's funny is because it's true, you know?
Yes.
And of course, I lost the train of thought.
Okay. Well, so that's great. I actually wanted to ask you, if with a complex case, let's say somebody shows up and let's say they have Lyme, they've got heavy metals, and that's linked with why they've got some Lyme bugs going on. And maybe we established they've probably got some gut issues going on. And you know they've probably got neurotransmitter imbalances, so they've come with that bundle, as most people do. Would you tend to leave addressing neurotransmitters in that bundle till later, or would you sometimes bring that in early to help the person? Or if somebody had serious gut issues, heavy metal toxicity, and Lyme, for example?
Okay, so let's go with that.
Do you have an order?
You have heavy metals, Lyme disease, and gut issues, which you know are going to end up in neurotransmitter imbalances.
Yes, and
now the person comes in with what symptoms?
Chronic fatigue.
What's affecting their life the most?
They could be pretty bad, like chronic fatigue, and they maybe are not able to work anymore because it's got really bad. Yeah, so quite, say, moderate for severe.
Okay, great. So let's talk about severe fatigue. Now, what I would do in a case like that, given all those things being true, given the fact that I have enough information to start working. If they have insomnia, which a lot of people do, and or they have a lot of anxiety, I'll fold in some of the neurotransmitter stuff immediately. Why? Because if you have a lot of anxiety, what's going on? You're having a constant fight or flight reaction. You know, you're like this all the time. Well, fight or flight is not a benign thing. It's affecting the entire endocrine system. So if I can calm that down primarily, I'm going to start getting ahead of the curve, okay? At the same time, I'll start fixing the cells. which is to give them vitamins and minerals that are capable of getting into the cells, usually in a liposomal form, give their bodies what they need to reestablish their cell walls, which are usually the fatty acids, either omega-3s or, for the most part, I start with phospholipid stuff because that gets indirectly. Okay, making sure now that they start fixing their guts, because most people have leaky gut syndrome, and that's the reason for inflammation, okay? It is the poor breakdown of food that is getting past the barrier, and then the immune system starts working on it. So if you can shore up the barrier, those aren't going to get through, and you're going to drop inflammation by definition. So you got to reestablish your mucus layer, reestablish the cellular function in the gut, and break down the foods.
Yes.
Okay, so that's the province of digestive enzymes.
Yes.
And reestablish your microbiome. Okay, now I use something called gut butter, which kind of combines all this stuff in one tablespoon a day, because I'm really big on compliance. So
yeah,
I don't like to see people taking 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different things, because anybody will do anything for 2 weeks, but it's not 2 weeks that's going to fix you. Okay,
yes.
So it's what they can do in the long term. So I'm going to start stuff like that first. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to get their gut sealed up, because that's going to drop their inflammation body-wide by about 80%. And I'm going to make sure that their cells, their biochemistry, get the cofactors and coenzymes to run their biochemical processes, because those are the reasons usually that those processes don't run. So if I can get vitamins and minerals into the cells and start fixing the cell walls, even if I did nothing else, I could get that person back towards where they can start reestablishing their homeostasis. It's a clinical decision on whether you treat the bugs at the same time or later. There's a lot of different criteria, but in my mind, actually, there's not written criteria out there, that people have argued with me, well, if you don't kill the bugs, you're not going to fix the leaky gut. I'm like, and then I'll look at them and say, well, if you start killing the bugs, you're going to raise the toxic level so high that you're going to put them in hospital. Which you prefer? You know, some practitioners give people antimicrobials and they start getting die-off reactions. And say, oh, you just have to go through it. Well, you're not suffering with them, okay? You're not sitting there day by day suffering with them. So get off your high horse. Starting to speak Brooklynese again. Okay, get out of your ivory tower and think about the patient, okay? So it's a clinical decision depending on what their most bothersome symptoms are.
Yes.
If it's anxiety and depression, I'll fold some of that stuff in the front end, especially insomnia. You don't sleep, you don't heal.
Yep.
My sainted grandmother, I have Nana's axiom. If you sleep and you poop, everything will be okay. Right?
Yeah.
It works. It's true.
Yes.
You sleep, you're going to heal. And most people aren't sleeping. If you have your digestive tract working, including what goes in, what gets digested, and what goes out, you know, you're going to take that big burden off your immune system and it's going to start working again. Okay. Now, some people, I have to treat the bugs simultaneously and I just do it in increments. It's a clinical decision. But generally speaking, I would fix the cells, the gut, usually neurotransmitters, because I'm usually looking at insomnia, and then I'll treat the bugs.
Yeah.
Okay. And what testing do I use? It depends on what the person needs. I like to do targeted testing, but if you have to throw out a net, in England, they have the functional diagnostic test, which is called FDX, which is a very, very extensive blood test that goes into a program that is just absolutely phenomenal. And I know the individual who created it, and he's one of the smartest men that I've ever met. The organic acid test is a very good one, but again, it requires a lot of interpretation. I like the one from Great Plains Laboratory, but the one from Genova is good also. And then there's targeted testing. You can do neurotransmitter testing that includes the cortisol levels. A single cortisol is worthless. Okay, and that happens a lot in medicine. They do a morning cortisol, so what? You need to see how it fares during the day. So you need at least four of them, okay? The testing for the various pathogens can go from the ridiculous to the sublime. Lyme disease testing, my gosh. The NHS, I'm sorry, I wouldn't trust any of their that test for that area.
Yes.
And let me tell you why. And this is true here also. The test called the Western blot tests different bands, which are weighted bands and kill adults. Don't ask me what that is. And in order to show positive, the patient's band level of antibodies has to be 60% or more of the exemplar. So you could have 15 bands, and it could be 55, 55, 58, 55, 45. And in other words, it all shows antibodies, but it'll be reported as negative. There are places in the United States, like MDL Labs in New Jersey and Igenex, although Igenex is too damn expensive, and in Armin Labs in Germany, that will show you the levels. So if I'm looking at a set of bands and they all have various levels of antibodies, even though it's not positive by CDC criteria, the person's got Lyme disease. Okay?
Yeah.
And you have to know which ones that, or maybe if it's just 41, that it may mean that they have one of the co-infections, like Babesia, Bartonella. These guys get into the nervous system and stay there if you don't treat them. And they will rear their ugly heads twice a year so they can replicate. And they're not easy to diagnose, so you have to have a high level of suspicion. Okay? There's three things, four. It's only Monty Python. Okay? There's actually three things that are the biggest challenges we face, aside from the COVID-19 right now, which is a big deal and should not be ignored.
Yep.
Okay, but outside this particular pandemic we're having,
yes,
and everybody should stay safe. Okay, really.
Yeah, we can.
It will pass. It will pass.
Yes.
Okay, and what we have to do is just hang in there.
Yeah.
The three things that are affecting us most are tick-borne diseases.
Yeah.
Lyme disease and so forth. Candida.
Right.
Okay, and parasites.
Okay.
You guys probably know that I do live blood cell analysis, and I've trained a lot of people in England to do it. You can see in the microscope, and it's projected on the screen. You can see candida. You can see it's there. It's staring at you. So if I'm looking at a drop of blood, and every time I move that slide around, I'm seeing four or five candida cells. Okay, how much is in that person's body? Duh. Okay.
Yeah.
And of course, if they drink alcohol and they get really sick, as opposed to when they were younger, that just tells you the alcohol is turning into acetaldehyde, and you can't get past that aldehyde stage, just like formaldehyde. And candida produces a lot of acetaldehyde, so that pathway is all blocked up. So by seeing that, asking a question, you'll know what's wrong. You'll know if what you're seeing is there. And what has been ignored because the testing is so horrible have been parasites.
Yes.
Okay.
I would throw in that list that you had. Sorry, I had to jump in because you're saying interesting things. I would have probably put some like actual heavy metal kind of chemical toxins, throw that in, because they usually go hand in hand, don't they? I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. You're absolutely correct.
Trauma and emotional stress that sort of lowers your entire resilience and makes all of those exposures to those things worse as well, so that we're less able to deal with it. And then you've got this, actually, I wanted to ask you something as well, just in relation to the COVID issue, this coronavirus right now, where they're saying healthy people are catching it. And I wonder if there's this, you know, subclinical level of heavy metals, a little bit of parasites, there's some Lyme, which conventional medicine would never have addressed or certainly wouldn't have diagnosed. And these people are being knocked down more because they actually have imbalances that are so prevalent and not recognized by conventional medicine. I was just throwing that out there because I think that it's scaring people, but actually, do you see the point I'm making?
Yeah. The point, if I can repeat it, what you're saying, and very, very, very astutely, is that the presence of subclinical issues that may be not expressing before this, for instance, maybe you may have a candida overgrowth, you have parasites, you have heavy metals. These things all contribute to the cell's inability to function. Heavy metals specifically, because they will knock down mitochondrial function. Your mitochondria is what gives your energies, your cell energy to work. Realizing that you have 30 trillion cells in your body, and you have 200 to 2,000 mitochondria per cell, you do the math, okay? So if mitochondrial function is knocked down, your cell is not going to heal, okay?
Yeah.
within that function, heavy metals will interfere with the biochemical reactions, leaky gut, leaky cells, leaky brain, which is the book that Elizabeth and I wrote, which is available on Amazon, okay, for I think $7, explains all of this stuff. Because if you have leaky membranes in the mitochondria, the protons that run the factory that produces ATP are just going to get out, and that factory is going to slow down, and you're not going to produce ATP, the cell's going to die. But it's relative. So it doesn't just die, but it has dysfunction for a long time. Why do heavy metals, how can you get them? Well, of course, you could be chewing on mercury if you like that. You can have, you know, fillings and so forth. But the real reason is because of that stuck cell danger response. Because the cells will normally get rid of small amounts of heavy metals. So if that's not working, you're breathing, hopefully, okay? And every time you're breathing in the gases that are in the atmosphere. And if you happen to be in a city, that includes petrol, that includes everything that's in there, including heavy metals. And little by little, you develop this, you know, this burden. How can you tell? Well, if you're doing a hair mineral analysis or the urine analyses, if you look at it, and a lot of them are just kind of borderlining high and so forth, and there's not one that's like crazy that you'd say, oh my, that's a problem. Your heavy metal burden is coming from the lack of cellular function. Sometimes you'll see arsenic way up, and sometimes that can come from chicken, that can come from rice usually. Okay, you're going to see mercury way up, okay? You have to ask if the person's got a lot of fillings or did they recently have their mercury fillings out, okay? Because no matter how good you do it, you're going to get a mercury hit. It's going to stay in your system for a while. Or do they take a chelating agent? Are they trying to chelate? You're using parsley or cilantro. That's pulling it out, but it's not binding, and that's what's making them sicker. But you'll see it there because it'll be an anomalous reading. Then you just have to ask questions.
Yes.
You know? So you're absolutely correct. So all these things.
Yes. Hmm? So to your point then, it sounds like, I think one of the things I wanted to draw out from what you're saying is that list of sort of those things we said, like the parasites, like heavy metals, all the gut issues, these kind of main stressors that we have, they are things that we need to look at whether somebody has a mood disorder or whether they're actually expressed as full-blown chronic fatigue, Lyme. It's these same issues, isn't it, that we,
yes.
And they're usually subclinical and they aren't recognised by conventional testing most of the time, and that these are the core things. So it's not so simple as just to think, oh, I'll just do a neurotransmitter test and take 5-HTP and that will correct my serotonin. It's like a little more complicated. This is the
well,
takeaway.
Here's the thing. You're correct. It is very complex, but what I'd like your listeners to understand is that if you do the basics,
yes,
which we call foundational treatment or bioterrain treatment, which is good water, good air, and in this particular time when we can't get organic food everywhere, you make your best choices, okay? You look at frozen vegetables, okay? Because frozen vegetables are picked at their peak, flash cooked, flash frozen, believe it or not. They're probably better than fresh vegetables if you can't get your hands on it. And yes, there are organic frozen vegetables. And even if you can't get organic, you make your best choices. If you can't get organic meat, look for kosher meat. Kosher meat is more organic than organic, okay? Because believe me, that those cows are raised in very strict conditions, okay? They're not given junk and so forth. Yes, it's more expensive. But you have a family to feed, okay? So you make your best choices, okay, to vary your diet as best you can, okay? And the thing you need to do for everything is make sure you're getting absorbable vitamins and minerals, getting, you know, reasonably good diet, reasonably good food, reasonably good air, reasonably good water, which can be just a Brita filter if you've got nothing else, okay? That takes out a lot of junk, and it's not very expensive. And if you have a family and you have one income where your income's dropping off and you're looking to take care of some of this stuff, maybe a simple filter without getting really ostentatious would be very helpful, because yes, you'd want to take care of the shower water and stuff, but it's the water you're drinking that you're putting most of the stuff in. You can decrease your exposures that way. And the biggest thing that has to be managed is fear. Fear is what turns off your immune system. Yes, I can quote scientific studies from here until the cows come home, okay? Is that an American phrase? Sorry. All right. I joke about everything, I told you. But fear is what kills people. Stay off the news. believe me, if they need you to know something, they'll let you know. If you walk outside and all of a sudden the National Guard or the Army's there, they're not there to hurt you. They're there to make sure civil order is maintained. They're there, especially in the States here, to deliver food, okay? Nobody's quarantined to the point where they're going to be arrested if they walk out, okay? If you're stupid enough and you're uncaring enough to gather in groups, okay, then they should have the right to kind of break you up right now, okay? Because you may not get ill, but the person who you're talking to will get ill. You know, wear a mask if you're talking to people. It doesn't have to be a horrible mask, but do your social distancing. Do it for other people as well as yourself, okay? Have some social responsibility, but fear is what will kill you. So stay away from Mr. Trump. Oh, my God, okay? You know, it's like a joke I have about lawyers. How do you know a lawyer is lying, a solicitor is lying? His mouth is moving, okay? I mean, really, you know, you have to be careful who you're getting the information from. Because there's a lot of people out there trying to sell you something, and there's people out there pontificating like crazy, or they're concentrating on vitamin D or just zinc. Look for a more holistic approach, but stay away from, you know,
yes,
the naysayers, okay? Go on YouTube and type in Corona parodies, okay? People are making videos. You'll laugh your bums off, I swear. The studies were done a long time ago, and it started with a gentleman whose name I don't remember. I apologize. But he had a chronic, deadly illness and cured it by laughter.
Yes.
And what he did was he was watching Three Stooges movies. And he found that with a good 10-minute belly laugh, he was able to sleep something like 6 hours. I may be paraphrasing. Okay.
Yes.
Fact is, that's how it started.
Yes.
So laugh. You can laugh. Play with your family. Remember that your children take you as, you know, the key whether they should be frightened or not. My colleagues and my patients take the cue from me. And I tell them the truth. I don't lie. I never lie. Okay, I tell them the truth. And I do enough research so they know, okay, doc, what do you think about this? I don't think this is going to be very helpful because, okay? And with all the stuff out there, most people will say, okay, thanks for, because they've done the research, okay? If something is complete nonsense, believe me, I'll let you know about it. There was a chiropractor saying that they had a patent on the coronavirus in 2006. I'm like, it's not the coronavirus. This is not that coronavirus. That was SARS from 2003. It took me 5 minutes to find it. And you're trying to put out this conspiracy theory. And what good is that going to do? You could talk about 5G. You could talk about, yes, we'll find out about it later. Why are you worrying about that? Circle of control, circle of influence, circle of concern. Stay in your circle of control. Maybe your circle of influence, neighbors, stuff like that. Your circle of control and the things you have no control over. And that's the one causing you most of your angst, most of your fear. Stay away from it. This will pass. Do the reasonable things. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your families.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dr.
You're
Jeff.
Most welcome.
That's so true. Such a great thing to end on as well, because that not only applies to this current situation, but even if this situation wasn't going on, worrying about symptoms, being in fear about it, you know, kind of stressed and overwhelmed about everything, that will literally switch on the cell danger response and will turn off your cells and stop them from working. So when our lovely Dr. Navio confirmed that. So tell me what your website is. So where can people find you? And also the full name of the book, the title of the book that you've written about leaky
sure.
brain.
Well, my website's easy, drjessarmine.com, drjessarmine.com, my name, okay? And I do offer a 30-minute complimentary consultation, which you can get there and just schedule it. If you have a chronic illness and you don't know what to do, this gives us an opportunity to do two things. Number one, I want to know if I can help you or not before I offer you anything. And two, frankly, we want to know if we're going to get along, you know? And it doesn't matter where you are in the world, I have a worldwide practice, but half my practice is in the UK, okay? But that's always available. The book that I wrote with Elizabeth Lambert, who's a naturopath in Australia and one of the most brilliant women on the planet. I know she was my student for a couple of years, and now she's like way exceeded me. I feel like she's like Darth Vader, you know. I once was a student, now I'm the master. Okay. It's called Leaky Gut, Leaky Cells, Leaky Brain.
Wow.
And it's a it's like I said, it's on Kindle. You can buy it the printed book, but the Kindle version I think is 7 quid, and it's in, even in Japanese. And it's all over the world. It's in Germany here and there, and basically the book goes into what a leaky cell is, and we wrote it to be that borderline between anybody can understand it and just enough scientific evidence for those who are scientifically minded to be satisfied with that. It's a really easy read. It's about 70 pages, and then it has all recipes, and it has the gut butter recipe that, really, that's what's going to fix the cells, and it's stuff that you can get, not too hard to get it. I've got variations so that if you can't get something in the UK, there's some alternates, which I do all the time because I have the Tasmanian version from Tasmania. It's a patient in Tasmania. They saw the Tasmanian version. I had the Tasmanian devil on it. Like, well, you can get this stuff in Tasmania, There's a Tasmanian devil going, blah, blah, rabbit sandwich,
Dr. Jess,
So it's
thank
not
you
like
so
it's
much.
there.
Yep.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
It's been awesome. Thank you so much. I hope everybody enjoyed that. Thank you and take care. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care for
Take
now.
care.